Well, continuing to do a very fun thing, recognizing people, I want to spend a little more time talking about Andy Anderson. And Andy Anderson is someone who has began as a native Kansan. He was the son of a physician. He grew up with an expectation that he probably would become a doctor. After competing high school in Kansas, Andy went off to Lawrence, where he earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in American Civilization and English from the University of Kansas. After 2 years of medical school at the Kansas University Medical School, he decided that that was not going to be his chosen field. So he opted for a career in broadcast engineering that has allowed him to excel in a variety of positions over the past several decades. His first engineering job in 1964 was at KUBC Radio in Montrose, Colorado. A year later, he joined KREY-TV in that same city. A move to Denver came in 1966, and that brought Andy to public television. At KRMA-TV, he was the color supervisor for the engineering staff. It was in that capacity that he supervised the conversion of KRMA from black and white to the color facility. Andy's growing family and better pay took him to the commercial sector, and that led Andy to the Denver NBC affiliate KOA-TV, where he served as an engineering supervisor from 1968 to 1974. In 1974, Andy came back to public television as director of engineering for the Rocky Mountain Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Regional Broadcast Facility, and PBS Delay Center, something that I'm very familiar with from my AT&T days. He spent 5 years at RMCPB recording incoming services from landlines from PBS and relaying them to stations in the west of the Rockies 2 hours later. With the advent of the PBS satellite interconnection system, the Delay Center operation in Denver was shut down. And he became chief engineer at KRMA-TV, where he was promoted to the director of engineering post several years later. He stayed at KRMA for 8 years until the station separated from the Denver School District and became a community licensee. In order to secure his well-earned retirement benefits from the school board, Andy stayed onto the system for several years, teaching electronics to high schoolers. In 1991, after completing his time in classroom purgatory, Andy came back to public television as a chief engineer at KUHT-TV, Channel 8, Houston, Texas. A year later, he assumed the current post as the director of engineering and operations. Andy's current boss, Jeff Clark, a PBS board member, says that Andy has had to get used to the climate change but had no trouble adapting to the station. For nearly a decade, Andy has brought Houston PBS forward technologically. And in behalf of this recognition, Jeff Clark has recorded a message, and I'd like you guys to roll that if you can.
Andy, all of us at Houston PBS are proud to join with your peers at the PBS Engineering Meetings in Las Vegas in congratulating you on receiving this year's PBS Engineering Excellence Award. Since your arrival at Channel 8 in 1991, you've played a key role in Houston PBS's incredible success. Your quiet manner, exceptional ability to articulate complex engineering information to non-engineers, and solid leadership have brought us into the 21st century with aplomb. Houston PBS has the legacy of being America's very first public television station. As we celebrate 48 years on the air next month and build upon a new legacy with KUHT-DT Channel 9, we're indeed fortunate to have you at the helm of our engineering and operations division. Thank you for your commitment to broadcast excellence, for your contributions to the public television industry over an illustrious career, and most importantly, for the work we'll do in the future to build upon Channel 8 and Channel 9's legacy. We look forward to your contributions to Houston PBS for many more years to come. Again, congratulations from all of us here in Houston.
Well, through critical staff development and recruiting, good advance planning, and excellent use of limited financial resources, Andy laid the foundation for Houston's PBS move to the new state-of-the-art facility in May of 2000. I went to visit that facility, and it truly is a state-of-the-art facility. The 18.5 million broadcast center completion marked the culmination of Andy's efforts to establish KUHT as a technological leader in Houston, as well as in public broadcasting. KUHT's DT transmitter is ready for sign-on. Andy's leadership has once again brought new technological advances to the VHF side of our industry, working to save resources and take advantage of two VHF signals for analog and digital broadcast. Andy and his colleagues have come up with a plan to multiplex analog channel 8 and digital channel 9 through a single transmission line and antenna. Preliminary tests are positive, and final tuning of the transmission system will follow on the heels of this year's NAB. Andy's reputation for making complex engineering information easy for non-techies and to understand is revered. In one instance, as station staff were planning a trip to look at various facilities and models during the early design stages for the new facility, the senior vice chancellor of the University of Houston system declared that she would not make the trip unless Andy was aboard to explain it to her. So in recognition of excellence in engineering, the PBS award for 2001, April of this year at this year's NAB, and this conference goes to Andy Anderson, KUHT, Houston, Texas. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. We would have rejected that tape at the Rocky Mountain Delay Center because of lip sync problem. I'm sorry. No, as always, the problem in receiving an award like this is that everybody is too generous. One feels the need to recognize the many people that have contributed to it, who have earned it certainly far more than I have. I wish there were time, but I suspect that those of you who are younger want to eat, and those of you who are my age want to go to the bathroom, you know. So it's been a marvelous run. I would correct Ed on one series of dates, however, and that is the Rocky Mountain Center actually began in the bowels of KOA in November of 1969 and went out of there. And the reason I want you to remember that is that in the spring of 1970, I learned that a gentleman had been hired to form an organization, at least the technical part of an organization called PBS. And sometime he was going to come to Denver. And so at that point in time, well, you have to remember that we weren't very elaborate at KOA and our delay center. I think we occupied one section of the KOA projection room. The whole thing must have been about 50 feet, square feet, that is. And you sat there at the desk during the nighttime, and I had a pair of cans that I'd put on because I had an Eastman 285 right next to me that kind of ran the commercials, and you couldn't hear Tom Keller's beautiful music out of GBH or whatever happened to be on. And thank God in those days they were sending us a lot of tapes, because most of the time the terrestrial circuits from Washington, D.C. simply didn't make it. Well, one evening I got the call. Dan had come to town, and his daughter was along with him, and he wanted to know. Now, he said he only had a limited amount of time, and did I think that 15 minutes would be adequate to see the Rocky Mountain Delay Center? You know, what do you say? I told him I thought that would be enough time, yeah, if he came by. But the problem was that I was really the only one that was on staff at that stage of the game, and would he have, well, his daughter would be along with him. So we left the daughter sitting in my chair with the cans on, and I took Dan off to see the rest of KOA. And among them, an interesting thing is that we had a cesium standard from the National Bureau of Standards. They had this crazy idea that if they could send data down the vertical interval, then the networks would let them use the lines, and they could get their time and frequency across the country at no cost. Well, this is a real screwy idea, but, you know, they liked it, and we liked the cesium standards, so who cared? But Wells took on to that, really, and the idea never really worked. But the idea of data in the vertical interval was kind of a good idea, and it was went on to be developed, and you guys know the rest of the story as well as I do. So it was an interesting evening, all in all, and Dan never forgot that visit to our center. As we went into negotiations, well, he used to remind us that we actually only fed 3% of the population, and that we only had a few employees, and that we really weren't worth very much. And then as the responsibilities grew and we started feeding a couple of time zones and did some satellite work at the Rocky Mountain Center and so forth, well, the budget grew a little bit, but Dan always remembered that we had started out very small and he kept the budget equally so. But we had a wonderful time. And of all the experiences I've had in broadcasting, that's probably the most memorable. And it's the most memorable obvious. I think maybe it's useful remembering at a time when we're starting to think of many channels out of our own little stations that really have not been equipped for that. We used to have visitors at the expanded Rocky Mountain Center, which had grown to about 4,000 feet. And as I said, was feeding multiple time zones and so forth. And people would look at our equipment, which had grown to 3 AVR-1s and a couple of AVR-2s and the original 3-1200s, and even, God forbid, a couple of the Viper-1s. We were trying out the one-inch format along with the rest of you. And we would show them around, and they would say, oh, and that's how you do all of this. And then they would go about their way, and we would kind of wink at each other because we knew that it really wasn't the equipment that was doing the job. It was the Kellys and the Rogers and the Johns and the Marcies and the Danas and the rest of the people. And I think maybe that's a good thing to remember. Good luck to you all. And thank you.